Welcome, everybody, to the Cone of Shame Veterinary Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Andy Rourke. Guys, I had a great one. I am here with Dr. Amy Durham, Assistant Dean for Education at Penn's Veterinary School. And we are talking about the curriculum transformation that they are currently going through. I'm an education nerd, for those who don't know. I am married to a college professor who has a love of pedagogy, which is the science of teaching. My conference, Uncharted Veterinary Conference, is an active learning, learner-centered conference. It is all about hands-on learning and education. I really dig this stuff. I really think that there are ways that we can dig in to train skills as well as knowledge. And so I was really geeked out when I started reading about what Penn was doing. There's a number of other vet schools that are rolling out similar curriculums. And I'm really happy and fascinated. I think the way that we educate doctors for a lot of schools has become outdated. It's just, it doesn't make sense in the modern world, the way that we educate. And I am so happy to see people shifting what they were doing, being honest about where we are and the resources that people have, and training in a way that's going to make doctors successful and comfortable and competent as fast as possible. I love this mentality. So anyway, I get in with Amy. We talk about what Penn is doing, why they're doing it this way. I ask them about the transition and what that experience is like, where it goes, and just really start to dig into what they're trying to accomplish. So I very much enjoyed this conversation. Amy's wonderful. I hope you guys will enjoy it. Let's get into this episode.
This is your show. We're glad you're here. We want to help you in your veterinary career. Welcome to the Cone of Shame with Dr. Andy Rourke.
Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Amy Durham. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Rourke. It's good to see you.
It is great to see you. It's my pleasure. For those who don't know you, you are an anatomic pathologist by training. You are also wearing the hat of Assistant Dean for Education at University of Penn's College of Veterinary Medicine. And I became aware of you because I started seeing articles about the fully integrated curriculum that Penn's Vet School is transitioning to. And I wanted to know more about it because I'm a bit of an education nerd. And so that's why I reached out to you. So thanks for making time.
Absolutely.
I started seeing this just a couple of months ago. And sort of the announcement was Penn Vet is transitioning to a fully integrated curriculum. Can you go ahead and just mile high lay out? What does that mean? What is this general transformation look like?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to try to do this from the mile high version. Yeah. So essentially we redesigned our entire four-year curriculum, and we had a couple of principles in mind when we did this. One of them was this backward design principle. So what are the, you know, knowledge, skills, and values that we want the day one veterinarian to have when they graduate? And then we just sort of went backwards from there and designed the curriculum. The other goal we really wanted to do is have the core curriculum, so that preclinical curriculum, to be 2 years, so that we get our students into the clinics in their third and fourth years. And so, yeah, so that's how we sort of started out with those principles, and a small, what we called curriculum redesign team was born in 2018, and we started to work. And pretty early on, we knew we wanted to do this backward design. We knew we wanted to use competency-based veterinary education as a guiding principle. And we knew we wanted to have more learner-centered versus teacher-centered educational experiences. So these are context-rich, application-based, and integrated, as you mentioned, curriculum. And so the way we integrated was how's best to describe this? So essentially, the first year is the animal and health. And so the ologies that we do, or the disciplines that we integrate together, are things like anatomy and histology and physiology. And those are integrated into what some people call systems-based, but we sort of do it like a block system or process-based. And so in any given process or system, the students are exposed to the anatomy, the histology, and the physiology kind of concurrently or in an mm-hmm. integrated way. And they're also sort of linked into context. And so we'll start to introduce disease in the first year, but only as by example. And then in the second year, the same, it's a mirror image of our first year, but now we're focused on the animal in disease. And so things like the diagnosis and treatment of diseases. And so those would be courses in the traditional curricula. Those courses would be things like pathology. We had something called medicine and surgery, and the different sort of microbiology, parasitology, those types of things. And so those are really how it's structured at a very high level.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about learner-centered education versus teacher-centered education. So you use those terms, but specifically, what do they look like?
So in the sort of traditional sense or the teacher-centered, you can see me standing up in a big classroom, right? I'm on a podium, students are sort of stadium in front of me, and there's the screen, and I'm delivering a PowerPoint presentation and delivering content. And so we still have to do that to a certain extent. We have not completely gone away from that. But what we've tried to do is integrate sort of more learner-centered activities. So try to do more small group activities, more lab-based activities, even when we are lecturing per se. Like we do things where we stop and we quiz or poll students. We bring them in and sort of make them sort of the center of the learning experience, not the professor standing in the front of the classroom.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Can you tell me a little bit, I want to get into backward design, because I love this approach to creating doctors. This makes so much sense to me. I beat my employees over the head with the phrase, what does done look like? What does success look like? And I know they are sick of hearing me say that because I say it daily. What does done look like? What does success look like here? And it's because I just so deeply believe in this sort of backward design, or what are we trying to produce? Can you lay down a little bit either the specifics or the general process that took you to deciding what a done, complete, competent doctor looks like? Because I think that that's really a point of debate for a lot of us.
Yeah. I mean, we really used the CBVE, the Competency-Based Veterinary Education that the AVMC has. And you can go onto their website and see. And we use their domains and competencies. Underneath of those, they have what are called illustrative sub-competencies. And then you can take it a step further to integrate something called entrustable professional activities. So those are the things that you can watch them do. And then if they can do that, you can entrust them to do them independently. And that means they're competent and ready to go into practice. And so we really relied on the hard work of that group that are continuing to meet in iterations as our, again, like I said, as one of our guiding principles. And then we also had to rely on our professors. I mean, every university has its unique personality, and it's mm-hmm. built on their history and the people that make up that place. And so we relied on our professors to do an exercise of really evaluating what they teach in the legacy curriculum and really looking at it and saying, is this core? Is this core knowledge? And that's a hard exercise because, we're content experts. Like, I could lecture for days on the thing that I love, right? But it's probably not the level of detail that our students need to have in sort of this core preclinical curriculum. And same thing is true as we get into the third and fourth years in their clinic years. So it's a hard exercise. And honestly, it's not done. It's a process that just sort of needs to keep going and be reevaluated routinely to say, are we producing what we feel are those day one ready veterinarians? And importantly, have we given them, and this is another principle that we used of understanding, do they know how to access information, right? So that they're mm-hmm. lifelong learners, because you're never done, right? Like, I'm back in school now myself, like, you're just never done. And so, we created this curriculum sort of based on the just-in-time principle, not the just-in-case. So don't just go ahead and memorize a bunch of things just in case you need it at some point. Know how to access and critically evaluate the information to sort of practice this evidence-based medicine so that when you're in clinics and you know, oh gosh, I need to go get this information, and you know how to get that information and apply it just in time for that patient.
Yeah. Hey guys, did you know that I have another podcast? I am the host of the Uncharted Veterinary Podcast with my dear friend, practice management goddess, Stephanie Goss. We have been answering questions for years. We started a year before Cone of Shame. I started doing the Uncharted Vet Podcast with Stephanie. We take questions from our mailbag. We have listeners who write to us, and they tell us about what's going on in their practice, and we try to answer their questions. And they are all about communication, leadership, management, things like that. It's about working with clients. It's about working with staff. It's about working with your boss. It is about all of those sorts of things. I mean, we have everything from trying to establish some trust in your team when you're a brand new baby doctor, fresh out of vet school, to managing an employee with mental health issues, to how to give notice without the guilt if you are in a place you just can't be there anymore. We've got all that stuff. We've got hiring, firing, working together, working with clients, reviewing your systems, you know, getting your practice to run smoothly and efficiently, how to manage your time. All that stuff is there. Check it out. Like I said, 250 episodes. You can see what everyone is about from the title, because it's basically the question that we're being asked. But anyway, it is a very popular podcast. I hope that you'll check it out and enjoy it and love it. I just love making it. So anyway, I just want to tell you it's there. Guys, let's get back into this episode. This type of just-in-time education, as opposed to just-in-case, I really think that this is where education, not just in our field, but across like higher learning is going. We live in the age of artificial intelligence, like the computing power that we can bring to bear. We have more power in our pocket, in our cell phone, than veterinarians 100 years ago had in the whole library. They did not own the knowledge that we can pull up in 30 seconds online. And so at some point that has to fundamentally change how we educate, because at some point if we're just hammering facts into someone's head that they could access in 20 seconds online, are we really training them, as opposed to training them how to interpret information and recognize what is important and make decisions and make priorities? So I really like this emphasis on just in time over just in case. Do you agree that there is sort of a societal shift in education in this direction? I mean, do you think that fundamentally with the technology we have, this is kind of where our skill-based learning is going?
You know, I don't think we have a choice, right? I mean, I think, so I have a 14-year-old son, and the way he learns is just not how I learned. The way our current students who are typically in their 20s, the way they learn and access information is not how I learned and accessed information when I was going through school. And so I think we have to meet our learners where they're at and recognize that the amount of information that is out there, I think that something like the stat is the doubling time of biomedical information is measured in like, you know, months and years versus decades at this point. So there's simply just no way that you can put all that information in your head. Like it's just not possible. And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right in higher education in general, but I would even say in, you know, just education across the board, teaching people how to critically think, critically evaluate, how to sort of have what we've called like productive skepticism for about what you read, especially important for doctors, is how to tolerate ambiguity. So all of these things, this is how we are trying to embed into this new curriculum, these sort of values.
Penn has a phenomenal reputation. And I know that because all of my friends who went to Penn tell me that. But they do. Penn has a phenomenal reputation. When you talk about assessing the success of graduates to continue to kind of update and tinker with the curriculum going forward, what does that assessment look like in your mind? How do you know when you have produced a successful graduate or not?
That's a great question. And so we've always had to do this. All schools have always had to do a sort of a program assessment and an outcomes assessment. It's part of our accreditation process. And when you build a new curriculum, especially one as very new as this one, you want to make sure that you haven't lost something in the translation. And so we'll do the things that we've always done for our curricular assessment and our outcomes assessment. So things like as basic as looking at NAVLE scores, right? Like that's a metric, but also we do exit interviews with our vet students. We interview employers around the area that hire our students to sort of see where they're at. We go back to our students a couple of years later after they graduate and ask them a series of questions. But in this new curriculum, we're introducing some other elements to our assessment, which is we have always asked students, you know, for evaluations for the coursework and the professors. But this time around, we're also adding in surveys of our professors. So what did they think of the new classes? Because their opinions are really important. And we've also created focus groups. So first and second year vet students sit in on like 5 or 6 student, you know, per focus group, and they just we give them lunch and we talk. And I mean, I'm not in the room because I would sort of bias the conversation, but they sort of talk to our administrative folks. and have the conversation about what's working and what's not. And that information has really helped us sort of in real time make edits to this unfolding new curriculum. So yeah, there's a lot of ways to do this. And I think there's no one right recipe. And I think different schools probably have different ways of doing it. But in general, we have to continually evaluate. And one of the ways we want to do that too is by doing research, like asking, you know, research questions on the new curriculum and publishing that data so that other schools can learn from it too.
Talk to me about how other schools are changing, because I said, because of its storied history, Penn really stood out to me when I started looking at who was integrating and changing up their curriculum. But there are, especially with the newer schools that are opening up, there's a lot of them, especially ones that do some of their clinical training offsite and things like that. These are newer models that we've seen for a while now, but a lot of them are leaning into very different models of education. Can you speak, and I know your specific interest is in Penn and you're sort of head down working on that, but do you see a trend in upgrading, a move towards sort of a fully integrated curriculum across other vet schools? Is this something that you think is moving very rapidly? Is it kind of very piecemeal? What are your thoughts about education of veterinarians across the United States and Canada at large?
You know, I don't want to speak too much for other schools, but I can tell you just, you know, in working with other people from across the United States, and I would say that many, if not most, veterinary schools have undergone or are undergoing or plan to undergo some degree of curricular redesign at this stage. So, you know, in general, I think change in academia is kind of like steering a cruise ship, like it usually takes a really long time. So I think maybe we're seeing kind of a trend where this is accelerating and probably for the same reasons that we've talked about, where we have a different student population. We know more about adult learning theory. We know how to sort of engage our learners better. And so I think Penn is not, you know, Penn's, the new curriculum is unique to Penn and what I've just described, but the idea of curricular change is certainly widespread throughout veterinary education.
You mentioned sort of this transition. This is not a flip the switch. All right, guys, on Monday, when the students show up, we're going to be doing it differently. How long does a transition like this take? What does that look? Is it rolled out in pieces? Surely it's not summer break and we're coming back with a whole new style. What is that?
It requires a lot of patience from our faculty and our students. So, and I have to say, everybody's been on board and been just amazing. But so essentially it got launched. The new curriculum got launched in 2022. And so as we stand here right now, we've got two classes in the new curriculum and we've got two classes in the legacy curriculum. And so there's times where I was teaching in the old curriculum and then I would turn around and then teach in the new curriculum. And I'm certainly not unique. Many of our professors have had to do that. And so it's been an all hands on deck and total buy-in, and our faculty really embraced it and have done an amazing job and are currently, you know, working really hard to continue that transition.
How do you square the experience of having the legacy students? You've got two classes of legacy students and you've got two that you're doing this new thing. And I'm sure that feelings are mixed. I'm a change junkie. I like to try new things. I like to push and evolve and I don't know. I enjoy that sort of evolution things. And so I think whenever I start rolling out a new thing, I am very excited for the people who are doing that. And I think I feel a little bit sorry for the people who are doing the old thing. Do you have thoughts like that where you, because you see the legacy students, do you have thoughts of, oh boy, I'm so glad we're transitioning to this. Are there things that you miss in the legacy way where you say, it sure was a lot easier when we had, you know, in the legacy way, I wonder if we'll go back to that. How do you square having those two different experiences going on at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, it's real. For the students that are in the legacy curriculum, I say to myself, I was a part of the legacy curriculum and I turned out just fine, right? So, or at least I hope I did. So, you know, I think they are getting a stellar education and they are going to graduate as stellar veterinarians. And I think, I am excited for our new curricular students because they're faced with some challenges too, right? There's hiccups in the rollout and they've got to roll with it. And they have been great and provided really important feedback, but also just given us the grace to mess up and try to fix it. Yeah. And so I think, yeah, I think, I mean, I love change too, but not everybody does. And so it's taken, you know, we've had to sort of meet in the middle and sort of come together. And I think it's going well, but yeah, for sure. This is not just, you know, like you said, flip a switch and everything's done.
Yeah. Well, this has sort of been your baby along with the team I know you work with, and you've put so much into this. When you think about this transition, what is most important to you? I mean, what do you feel that you desperately want to get right here? Like what would make this a success in your eyes?
Oh, what does this look like? Right. There's so many ways I could answer that question.
I just mean for you personally, yeah. I mean, you as a person who has invested so much in themselves, like it's just not, I think it's not even about the curriculum overall, but you, Amy, like, what do you want to get out of this?
One of the things that I love, I'm a pathologist, which means like I sort of feel like I straddle between clinical medicine and sort of biomedical sciences. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've really loved about this new curriculum is how we've, you know, in the clinics, in practice, you talk about interprofessional clinic teams, right? You're sort of the doctor, mm-hmm. and the clinic staff. We've sort of modeled that kind of by accident with our interdisciplinary teaching team. So not interprofessional, but interdisciplinary. So when we have these block courses, we have our basic scientists pair up with our clinicians to create this curriculum. And one of the things that I have been so that I've loved to sit back and watch happen is sort of, even though we've all worked with each other in some way or another for decades in some cases, there's this deeper level of respect that we have for what we all bring to the table in educating our veterinary students that I've really enjoyed watching happen. And then I also feel like in a way we've sort of modeled that idea that you can sort of have these teams come in and work really well together, even they come from different disciplines or different skill sets. And so that's sort of one of those, I don't know, almost like it's an emerging theme that's come out of this curricular redesign process that I've really enjoyed.
That's awesome. Dr. Amy Durham, thank you so much for being here. If people have questions for you, if there's other institutions that are looking at transitioning their curriculum, how can people reach out? How can they get in touch with you?
You can find me, you can email me. I'm on the on the website. Please just email me. I'd love to answer any questions.
That sounds amazing. Thanks so much for being here. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Take care of yourselves, everybody. And that's it, guys. That's what I got for you. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks to Dr. Amy Durham for making time to talk about what Penn is doing. Big, big love for those guys and encouragement for them in the journey that they're on. And I'm so glad that they're putting the effort in. I think it's going to be great for our profession. I think it's going to be great for Penn grads. And just, anyway, I'm all optimism about this type of transition in our profession. I think it's great to be in vet medicine. I love it. I love a lot about where we're going. And this just makes me super happy. Guys, take care of yourselves. I'll see you later on.